But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, it's Scott Brennan again on a Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Very excited to be back. Even though I just did an episode, it feels... Burlow, you weren't on the last episode.
Yeah, that secondary regular day work job thing kind of sucks a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you've been on every episode for like 15...
Yeah, the streak is
like
over,
that.
Man.
The streak is gone.
It's like DiMaggio, man. It's sad to see it go, man. It's... I mean, all the people in the stands must be crying, you know. The internet must have been clamoring over when's the Burles coming back, you know.
You broke the internet?
Yeah. And worse than Kim Kardashian's bare ass.
But actually, I guess I'll introduce the guest first. Joe Fernandez said in on the last episode, good friend of mine, and we were just talking, and I have a guy named Peter Bond on here. I don't know him at all. But it's a funny story how we got connected, but we'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, Pete, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah. Pete actually, well, we'll get to that. But first off, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the show that just happened on Sunday, the second Verbal Shenanigans Comedy Night, or I guess you can call it.
Yeah.
It was freaking awesome, in my opinion, even though...
Great
I ran
crowd
and stuff,
again.
But yeah. Great crowd, you know, 50 people there, nice tight room, and the comics killed it, man. We got rave reviews, all the comment cards were amazing. I went up, posted, felt good. Mm-hmm. I felt good, did a lot of stuff off the cuff this time, which is, like we were just talking before we went on, is not, you know, where I'm at, it's like, and I guess where you're at too, Burlow, it's like... we think so much in our head about our set and this is what we got to do. And, you know, like I felt so much better just being in the moment and just letting stuff go and not planning to the minute, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of the same thing. I mean, I did some usual stuff in the middle. Obviously you did too, but it was,
of course.
You know, it's kind of nice, you know, just trying some stuff out. And I mean, some stuff didn't work, but you know, you just don't blink an eye. You keep going. The crowd was good, man. They
crowd was
enjoyed
great.
The good stuff. The
crowd was phenomenal. And this show definitely went smoother. We changed the dinner arrangement a little bit, the seating arrangement, how we set the dinners and stuff, and just gave everybody time. It gave the waitresses time to get food out. Everyone was done like at showtime. Last time, what did we push it? Like 45 minutes at least.
Minimum, I mean. And that's a key thing. I mean, people don't think about that. Like, the staff, man. Like, in the first one, they were pretty stressed out because everybody came in at the same time.
Right.
And, you know, everybody's ordering, so the chef's trying to get, like, 10 tables out at the same time.
Yeah, last time we basically had all 65 people show up
at
6, and we were planning the show at 7:30, and it was just crazy. It was crazy. And, you know, this was the first time this place ever did it, the first time I ever did it last time. So It was a little hectic at first, but the show was great. Just it took a while to get the show going. But as far as the show, Burlow, you went up next. Did a nice job.
Thank you, sir.
Then Bobby Gaines went up. Bobby killed it. I went back the day after to get collect stuff, and I talked to a couple people who were there. They loved Bobby. I don't know if it's because he's black.
That's exactly it. I saw it in the comment cards. Thank God you brought a black guy this time.
Thanks for bringing the black along.
Bobby's just a natural talker, you know.
Bobby's great.
I mean, even in his jokes, it doesn't even sound like he's setting up a joke. He's just like talking to you.
Well, he's got that skill where it seems like it's off the cuff, and he's got that down, you know. And I've seen him do the same things a lot of times, but he killed it. Bobby's. He's just such a nice guy, you know, like, And it was funny. You know, one of my favorite lines of his, and it's just like a, I think I said, it's just a throwaway line. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you know, how's everybody doing? It's over, blah, blah, blah. Any Essex County in the house? You know, he looks for people to raise his hand, and he's like, oh, no? It's like, shit, I was looking for a ride home, you know? And, they see the black guy, and he's got that attitude on stage. Mm-hmm. He's great. And then my favorite local comedian lately, anyway, has been Andy Hayward. Andy, if you're listening, I'm loving the new shit, man.
Damn it.
He does characters and, like, a lot of, like, nice. I don't know. He's just quirky and he's so, like, the goal of these shows has been to kind of, like, when I book him is to really try to diversify the comedians completely so you're not going to get, like,
right.
dirty, yeah, or clean, you know? Like, so, like, the first show we had the two of us on, our friend Doug, and then Chips Cooney, who's, like, awesome. He's been in the business for, like, 40 years. He does, like, a...
Little magician. Yeah,
he does, like, a hack magician. Like, nice. He pretends that he's really serious, but you can tell how all his terrible tricks are. Like, he'll take a solo cup, and there'll be two on there, and he'll be like, you know, wave his hand over, and then, you know, like, that's... But he stays completely serious the whole time. And he was on America's Got Talent. He was in Benchwarmers.
Nice.
I've said it a million times on this podcast, he's the nicest guy in the world. He has taken me, like, under his wing, and... We don't even talk comedy now when we talk. We talk about, like, life and women, and he's just a really awesome guy. And then Johnny Watson.
That transition of when you, like, look up to somebody and then you start going from that business to, like, hey, how's your day going? And you start doing that, like, just life talk.
Right, and it's great because this guy doesn't owe me the time of day, you know? Like, I'm nobody, you know, and he's been around, and he just... talks to you like a normal, and we had him on the pod. I'm actually bringing him back on. He we didn't have enough time with him, but he played like semi-pro baseball for the Yankees, and he's a jazz drummer, and he's like, he's just really interesting guy. He's been all over the country. He was in the military, you know, it's just one of those guys you want to like sit and talk to.
That's
like
awesome.
with or without the mic on, you know.
Yeah.
It's one of those guys, if you had a beer, you just sit back and relax and listen, mm-hmm. and just ask questions.
And just kind and gentle.
Yeah.
And
he's appreciative.
Awesome. And he's awesome because he still goes out and does open mics. He's still he's still like working at his craft and been doing it forever, you know.
Very
and
cool.
That's what's cool. And then Joe Fernandez went up, did probably about 45, you know.
Yeah.
Killed it. Nice. Absolutely killed it.
Joe's an awesome comic.
Yeah, Joe is great. And I was just saying to you right before we hit record, you said, I wanted to get out and see you and Joe. And I was like, oh, you know Joe? And I've known Joe for 10 years now because we worked together. And I was saying that when I was working with him, I was like an intern at the TV station he works at. And he had just really started getting a little momentum and kind of doing shows and stuff. I remember seeing him, and then I was doing like little open mics. I really wanted to do comedy. Took like 7 years off. Forgot the married, house and job and all that stuff. And then I came back like a year and a half ago, and most rewarding thing I've done. But now it's awesome to see Joe's like headlining now.
He's like all over the place.
He just played with Colin Quinn, yeah. Which is awesome. You know, like you know, and it's really nice to see. He's a humble guy. He's awesome. He's got a great outlook on like comedy. He doesn't take it too seriously, which in this freaking business, what I'm learning is a lot of people take it way too like they think they are just they're like I should be headlining yeah your 10 minutes at the bowling alley that you did last week is gonna get you a headlining spot. And like he's even talked on the last one like. He's just stretching his like headline. Like he's just starting to get to like comfortable headlining now. It takes years and years and
absolutely.
Years. Because yeah. Anybody can go have a killer 10 minutes, but you got the audience for 45 to an hour. You got to pace yourself and think
yeah.
and be. And there's always going to be the unknown aspect. What's the crowd going to be like?
Yeah.
You know. So it's great to see. And yeah, I mean before we get into the podcast, just want to say. Joe's father just passed away this week, so heart goes out to him.
Yeah, prayers to you and your family, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah, hope everything's all right, brother.
You'll make it through. It sucks, though. But other news on the podcast before we start. possibility of another room. I'm not going to say where it is, but just had a meeting this week, really close to here.
The wife opened up the basement. It's so exciting.
Yeah. And possibility of Verbal Shenanigans getting in somewhere else and starting another show, which is, awesome. Which could be good, which would be a lot of fun. Really, like, I like the producing side of it. I like the ability to hire the people I completely trust and love, and they're good people, and they deserve to, and they, I know what they're going to bring an audience. But it's very stressful working with owners who may or may not get it completely. Like, you know, we had 50, 60 people here on a Sunday night, and you made a shitload of money. Well, we won't get into that because they might listen.
Yeah. And the cool thing is you're looking in this area. It's kind of like you said. I mean, Morris County, it's dead in this area. I mean, you and I have done enough mics where it's like, oh, it's a really close mic. Oh, cool. Where's it at? It's about 35, 40 minutes away.
I feel like everything is a half hour, like, and then some, like, to get to comedy. And there's no rooms around here, no workout rooms. There's occasional shows and, like, hotel. You know, there's nothing, like...
Yeah, it's very spotty.
There's no there's no consistent comedy, which I would love to get. Even if it's once a month, once every 2 months, you know, to just throw a show and try to get the community involved a little bit.
Right.
Have them want to come back. Real quick, on the Dover show, what was cool is the first show I wanted to do a charity thing, and it was just too crazy. We bought but we did a 50-50 raffle we ended up doing it for a group called Dover Renaissance, and it was perfect because they're like a group that's trying to revive the image of Dover a little bit.
Very cool.
And do like community events, and this happened to be kind of a community event, and we raised
$121.
Well, right, we did a 50, so we had
242.
So, you know, $100 went to, and I actually went back to get my stuff, and the guys were there, and they were saying how thankful they were. They're like, wow, 100. I guess it's a very small charity group, and they run like 5Ks and beautification of Dover projects. Awesome. So, really cool. Hopefully, we can keep that up. In fact, for the next show, which is hopefully going to be in August at Dover, we're taking a little summer break, kind of, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I have a killer lineup on that. But next, we're gonna put that on the flyer. Like, it's a charity. Like, some of it goes to charity. So hopefully, we get the people from the organization.
Yeah.
Like, we're gonna do it for Dover Firemen next time. Awesome. So that was a cool. I like to keep that going.
Definitely
and keep that community feel.
Definitely a great amount. I mean, if you think about it, we had about 50 people. Like 242. That's almost $5 a person. So I mean, you can't complain about that.
Exactly. And especially it was last minute. It was thrown together and. It worked out well. So the second Verbal Shenanigans show, to me, huge success, massive success. Especially, you feel like it's a success in the moment, but it's afterwards, the people coming up to you, and the comment cards I put on the table. Every single one was positive. Every single one. The first one was about 80 to 85% positive, all positive.
Right.
This one was. Literally every single one.
That's awesome.
Every single one. Great. When you're coming back. We loved it.
I mean,
excellent.
Just the fact that people filled them out is cool enough.
Like, exactly.
It's even better when it's all positive.
Right. So I guess that's that with the Dover show and the possible new show. Before we get to you, Pete, I was able to do something this week. I was pretty happy about. I got to play the Stress Factory, which I
saw the picture. That was so which, awesome.
You know, it was... you know, I grew up. I'm a not only a Duke. I'm a gigantic fan of comedy. I've always been. I went to a lot of comedy shows in college, and that was what the thing I liked to do. Like I used to like. I've seen most of my favorite comedians, which is pretty cool to say. Like I haven't seen like the massive ones like Seinfeld and stuff, but I've seen Chappelle and Brewer and Geraldo and all these guys growing up, and I've seen a lot of them at the Stress Factory. And it's a great club. It really like it's the really only like I think like completely designed for comedy club in New Jersey as far as I've seen. Like it's a comedy club. That's all it is. I even went there on my bachelor party to Stress Factory. You know, like
nice. I think I've been there to check out a show in probably like a few years. I went to go check out Dr. Dirty, John Valby.
Right, John Valby.
Yep.
He's been around forever.
Yeah.
I remember hearing his name when I was in high school. but I got to get on stage. It was, I went down and did a mic in Asbury Park opening for like an improv group. Turns out the guy liked me. He's like, oh, I could tell you've been doing it. We do this once a month at the Stress Factory. Would you like to come open up for all the improv groups? And I said, 100%, just to get on the stage. And it was a small crowd, but a great crowd. And the set went really well. It was just very cool to be there. And me and Ritu Chandra, she's a female comedian, Indian woman, we both went and did it. And it was just cool to say. Now I could say Scott Brennan did the Stress Factory. Was it even remotely close to sold out? No, but it was a good experience. So
you were in the building. That's all that matters.
In the building, on the stage. Yeah. And the guy was very cool. I will give a little shout out to Mike here. He, you know, like sometimes you go and it's like you have this amount of time exactly. You know, like you get off when. He was like, man, the two of you split 20 whatever minutes. You want to get off early. You want to go a couple extra minutes. No problem.
That's cool.
Which is nice. You know? And the improv groups are good. Like there was three of them. Two of them were definitely like way better than the one. But the one was, I'll give them a break. They were like college, a group of like Rutgers improv group. So, and that improv jam, that's the name of it. I realized that me and my ex-girlfriend from like 11 years ago went to go see them in Red Bank, and I'm like, they can't be the same group. I talked to them after. It turns out they're the same group. They've been going since 1994 doing improv.
That's awesome.
And he's been in it the whole time, but, you know, they get new members and stuff.
Right,
it was pretty damn cool, though. I was like, that's 20 years. 20 years they've been doing it, you know, different places. So it's cool. Got to do the Stress Factory. Definitely cross it off the bucket list, but hopefully get to go back there in the future a lot. Now, Pete Ski,
Mr. Bond.
Now, this is interesting. This is why I love doing this podcast. I don't care if two people freaking listen to it.
Pretty close.
It has opened all these channels to people, you know, people that I never thought I would talk to. Like the last two episodes ago, we talked to a guy who was attacked by a hippopotamus.
That's crazy. That's my wife's favorite animal. We actually, I adopted one for her at the Philly Zoo, and we got to go feed it, and it was so nice. But they're freaking vicious.
Well, it's funny because I have a bit on it, like a hippo. I went to the Camden Aquarium for a hippopotamus's birthday. It was that just happened to be
right,
and I was telling these guys about the bit, and Carver were going to a mic or a show or something, and I was like, I get on my phone. I'm just Googling. Like, we eventually started talking about, imagine being attacked by a hippo. It's crazy. They're deadly, but they look so cute in an aquarium. And I Googled, like, hippo attack survivor. So this guy, Paul, you know, I'm like, oh, shit. And I'm like, bro, email him for me. Email him. You know, oh, would you like to come on? Not thinking seriously at all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So 2 weeks go by. And we do another podcast, and we're like making fun of him on the pod because he's like a motivational speaker now, and we're like, yeah, motivational speaker, blah 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 blah. Two more weeks go by, and all of a sudden, I get a call at work from some random number, and I almost ignored it. I'm like, I don't know, some
bill collector or something,
and I listen to the voicemail, and it's like, hey, it's Paul. The hippo attack guy, I saw your email, and I would be interested in doing it. But I'm like, holy shit. And the day before, I just put up the episode where we're making fun of him. I'm like, we got to take it down, you know. Like, and then he, like, listened to it, and he emailed me again, like, I could see why you were surprised that I called you back. But he turned out to be freaking awesome. Like, it took me months of just being, hey, what time? Because he has a crazy schedule. He lives in Detroit now.
Oh,
but
wow.
But he's from South Africa. He was a tour guide. Basically, we talked about that a lot, but the podcast has opened up to so many people. One of them was a guy named Randy Santel, which Berlo got on the podcast, and he's a competitive eater.
Yes.
And he's a monster. Like, this is what he does all day long, every day. He's doing two challenges a day sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And he travels around. And we went to Sabretti's, which is in Lake Apacon. Little hot dog place. Good. A lot of crazy hot dogs and crazy, like, what would you call them?
Wild game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
he just put up a thing. He has, like, antelope hot dogs now. And
now he has some rattlesnake chili.
So we're doing a live event. It's awesome. He's eating them. He's crushing this record, right? And, like, we look behind us, and there's, like, current record holders.
Uh-huh.
And we see your face.
Yep.
And I get, what was the record at the time?
I think I 19. Did, yeah, 19. Because the old record was 17, so I wanted to go for one more, plus the insurance.
So Berlin gets on Facebook, types in your name, and we're like, let's try to call him, like, while we're on here, because that would be really interesting. Call you. And we're like, oh, you know, Peter, like, Randy's killing your record. And you were like, oh, man, that's awesome. You know, like, we were asking you, like, advice. And this was like, wow, this was maybe 20 episodes. I don't know how many episodes.
Yeah,
it was 15 episodes.
It was like July of last year or something like that.
So you were like, oh, that's cool. And, like, we even, like, tapped back into, like, we called you later on. Like, he's getting close. He's getting close. Or... And then we're like, yeah, he crushed his your record. But apparently there's like a thing, like if you puke, the whole record goes out. And he got down to the 29th and a half hot dog.
Yeah, the 30th. Yeah.
The 30th hot dog. Mm-hmm. And he puked and at the wasabi dog and he didn't get it.
The ghost
but he
pepper.
Had like 19 in like...
Yeah, he beat, hit
yeah,
in like, hit the 20 in like 10 minutes.
I actually changed the rules for that competition mm-hmm. because the original rules for that competition were you have to eat as many as you can in an hour. So I smashed the previous guy's record in half the time because I did mine in like 29, 23 or something. I did 19.
Yeah.
So the other guy did his 17 in an hour. So he thought that was pretty crazy. And then when I was listening, or when I was getting updates from you guys,
right.
And he crushed it in like 12
it was
minutes.
Unbelievable.
It was amazing.
Yeah. He was just like we were like, oh, it's time to start the podcast. Oh, he's on hot dog number 4. You know, like he was just like, you know, like Kobayashi, like he was just killing him. And the crazy thing about that is like all the hot dogs are all different.
Yes.
Like, crazy toppings on each one of them.
There's some weird ones.
Yeah. The Hershey dog.
That one's probably the weirdest with the, like, it's got chocolate syrup and marshmallows. The only thing that was weird about it is, like, I purposely wore, like, I'm a huge Big Lebowski fan. Mm-hmm. So, and I had a Walter shirt that says amateurs on it. And that was the whole point of the competition. And then the guy's like, oh, we're bringing in a competitive eater. I was like,
right.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, I hope he smashes the record, like, because that's what he does.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the story gets in weird. Like, it turns out, like, after we, you know, you were like a great sport about it. It was really fun. And it actually added to the podcast. It was interesting. Like, oh, you know, like we actually got in contact with this guy. But you're a pretty interesting guy yourself.
Thank you.
You have, from what we know about you, you have some interesting, I don't know if you want to call them hobbies or interests or thing, even career, I guess.
I figure the more I do now, the less I'm going to regret later in life.
That's exactly how I feel.
Ever since I was younger, I try to put my hand in as many things as I can.
Right.
I started training to be a pro wrestler when I was 15
mm-hmm.
in my hometown of Bayonne.
And my whole family's from Bayonne.
Really? That's so funny.
My whole family, Bayonne, Jersey City.
Yeah.
Originally.
And then through wrestling in 2009, I got into stunt work and got my SAG card and just been doing stunts and acting gigs ever since whenever they pop up. I still have to work a day job to pay the bills in between.
Of course.
But, you know, when gigs come up and, like, they're great when they come up, but they don't come up often enough to pay the bills.
Now, real quick Bayonne question.
Yes.
Do you remember, you might not remember my dad's business, but it was called D&B Electronics. It was like an electronics shop.
Sounds very familiar.
And it was across the street from Dave's Automotive. It was on Avenue E.
Yes.
But anyway, he had that for 25 years there. But I know Bayonne pretty well. Judicky's.
Yeah. Actually, I got my wife addicted to Judicky's donuts.
Nice.
And every time we go, we have to get cookies and donuts when we go there.
It's just like
a tradition.
We have the same thing like Christmas Eve. Like my aunt, she's the only one still there, I think. The only one still living there. She brings the box of Judicky's every single time. Yeah. Every single time you do the
parents,
sprinkly donuts.
Yep. Yeah, my parents live in town. Anytime we go to a family party outside of town, that's the first thing everybody asks for. It doesn't matter where they live in the country.
Yep.
They ask, did Ro bring the Jadicki's donuts?
It's just like an old school bakery. The building's like really old looking.
They actually just did a really, really cool fundraiser. The house behind the bakery burnt down.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a fundraiser a few weeks ago that I actually went into town just to buy some donuts because for every donut they bought, proceeds went to the family.
Oh, that's great.
And it was all, it was the that's whole great. Day. Any sprinkle donut.
It's a great idea.
And there, it was, the place was packed. Like, it was really cool that they, again, it goes back to the community thing.
Bay owns an awesome town. It's changed a lot.
It's changed a lot. It's almost becoming like the new Hoboken.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's only a matter of time before that is the next. I say this all the time because Hoboken's filled up. You know, yep. Rich, it's riched out. Jersey City's definitely turning the other way. Like, I had a million people move there. All my friends moved there. Apartments everywhere. Bayonne's the next logical
Bayonne, step. It's everywhere's getting condos. Like, mm-hmm. You could tell there was going to be a change when, you remember George's Pub and Grub?
Yeah.
That's condos now.
Like, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They knocked it down and went out of business probably like 10 years ago.
What's that other old Irish place in Bayonne? It's really old and it's just the Rubens. That's all I ever remember getting there. What the hell is it called?
It's not Irish. You're not thinking of Hendrickson's.
Hendrickson's. That's right. Yes. So maybe it's not Irish.
German place.
Yep, yeah.
Right on Broadway.
Yep. It's just like an old dumpy kind of bar.
The old army base. I went to summer camp there from like second grade to eighth grade. And now that's all condos too.
Well, it's getting close. It's getting close. And I feel bad for some people because they're going to get forced out of there. Yeah. You know, go probably to Newark. I don't know. Newark's starting to build up too. Newark down by the arena. I go to a ton of Devils games.
Yep, absolutely.
I remember when I think I went to the first game at the stadium, and you were all like worried about, it's Newark, blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. It's beautiful down there. There's great bars down there. There's like you got in the train there. It's awesome. The stadium's great, you know? Like,
I love that place. Not too happy with the new owners cutting a lot of the perks for those certain tickets.
That's what happens when you bring Philly owners into New Jersey.
My wife and I.
The Sixers almost won one extra game this year. Don't be
he's a Sixers, Phillies fan.
Flyers.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Hey, we got to bring in 08. So.
My wife is a huge Don Mattingly fan, so she is a Dodgers fan, and it's actually a lot cheaper to drive down to Philly and get tickets down there to see a game than it is to see them play. Even the Mets, like we priced tickets for the same section. It was like three something for the Mets. We went down to Philly. We got tickets four rows behind home plate for like 70 something bucks each, and they gave us $30 on each ticket to spend anywhere in the arena.
Yeah, the Philly Stadium is very beautiful. You're gonna have plenty of seats available this year. I will say that. when the Mets come to Philly, it's basically going to be a second home game for the Mets. Yeah,
since we're on it, empty. 11 in a row, baby. Yeah. 11 in a row today.
Made 11, right?
11 in a row.
My grandfather's a huge Mets fan.
Swept 10 games at home, all division rivals.
That's awesome.
Awesome. But we won't get it. We won't get to that. But Bayonne. But so you, I don't know where we start. So wrestling, I guess we should start.
Yeah. I started trained to wrestle when I was about 15, and then I kind of went like my parents didn't want me doing it, so I stopped going to wrestling school, and then I started going back when I got a little older, and then they wanted me to stop again. And then
did this come out of being like just a big fan of wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, I was a huge fan since I was a kid. I think I want to say my parents like I was a baby. I was not even one yet, and they went to go see WrestleMania 1 on a big screen in Elizabeth.
So, yeah.
Like, I remember that. And then even as a kid, like, I just love wrestling. I would go to every show. And, you know,
I was into a few. Yeah.
Me and my buddies were big into wrestling for a while, and we had our own little backyard wrestling group.
Yeah, I went that route too.
We did a show at the park, and we like invited like the neighborhood kids and stuff like that. And the cops came by a bunch of times. Like, what the hell are you doing?
I'm like, nothing.
But I was Rampage. That was my name.
Ooh,
yeah. Nice. And I remember we had a fake. My sister came by. I remember we had a fake like blood pack, and I like jumped off the backstop of the baseball field and like hit it. She's like, "Oh my god!" She like ran home to my grandma, like Scott Fabian. We were such tools.
I really lucked out. I think what kind of pushed me in the direction to pursue wrestling was I was about 9 years old, and they used to have these shows at Bayonne High School. And, you know, they always run in, like, a name. So, like, Superfly Jimmy Snuka was on it. Right. Iron Sheik was on it. My dad knew the guy that owned a bar was called Patsy's, and they would all go to eat after the show there. So my dad knew the owner, so I got to go hang out and have dinner with them afterwards, and I remember being like,
I remember my dad in Bayonne told me, like, Greg the Hammer Valentine used to always come in.
He used to
in.
Live there. Yeah, he used to live in Bayonne for a while.
Him and Chuck Wepner used to always come in, he said.
Interesting. Yeah, Chuck Wepner, the guy who basically inspired the Rocky movie.
He did. Yep. He won the Bayonne lawsuit, too.
Yeah, he did. That was one of the probably the best ESPN 30 for 30s. But, yeah, I wound up going there, and I remember talking to this one wrestler named Derek Domino about, I want to be a wrestler when I get older. So I knew from a young age, like, I wanted to do this, so eventually I'm going to find a way to do this. And I was talking to him, and he's like, oh, that's great. You know, it was cool. When I first started training, he was doing a show. There used to be a promotion called Jersey All Pro that ran out of Bayonne.
Right.
And so I was so excited because he was on the show, and I got to tell him that I was going to train. He was so messed up on something. Like, I went to go talk to him, and, like, I just saw through the back of his head. His eyes were so glassed over. And that was my first disappointment in wrestling, the first of many.
Yeah. So, when did you actually go to, like, wrestling school?
When I was 15, I started training.
Wow.
At the same company that ran the shows in Bayonne, they had a wrestling school. So I was training there, and actually the first guy I ever locked up with, Charlie Haas, went on to wrestle for WWF. I think when it was still the F, too.
Interesting.
Yeah. And actually him and his brother, Russ, were an awesome team, and unfortunately Russ passed away while they were still in their developmental territory.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wound up getting teamed up with somebody else, but then they hit it big, and you know, he had a pretty good run in the WWF, and it was kind of cool because a lot of guys I got to grow up watching,
right,
you know, or see wrestle there are like huge now. Like CM Punk came through there, really? Daniel Bryan came through there.
Well,
so it was cool to see them, like, you know, work on a small stage and hone their craft there.
Now, when you were younger, like, I remember, like, I hear stories like in the days where, like, McMahon, like, had his wrestlers stay in character when they're out, just because he wanted everybody to still think, oh, this is real. If you're a heel, you gotta act like an
asshole. Yeah, I'm a firm believer in that. Like, it's the character is supposed to be an extension of yourself. So I really think that, you know, not only just staying in character outside of the ring. Like when I first started wrestling shows. It's weird. I worked my way up. So I was training when I was 15. Then when I was 18, I was managing a guy named Skinhead Ivan, who years later became my tag partner. But I literally worked my way up. Like, it went from selling tickets at the door to setting up rings to managing and then to actually wrestling. But when I first, my first, like, gimmick when I was wrestling matches was a convict. So I was the first one in the building. So nobody saw me come in. I was the last one out of the building, so nobody saw me leave. And a few times it was cool. Like, we'll work town shows, and we'll get the cops involved from the town.
Oh, nice.
So it's like, awesome. I remember,
take you out of there.
Yeah, we wrestled, me and my partner wrestled Superfly Jimmy Snuka and somebody else up in Connecticut. And, like, we had a bigger entrance than he did. Like, we each had our own cop car escort to the ring, and it was just awesome.
That's awesome.
Let's go. Wrestling, it gave me a lot of things. Like, I can't knock it. It gave me, if it wasn't for wrestling, I would have never gotten into acting. It was literally from a wrestling show. I went from wrestling, like, a Newark show in the afternoon
right
to a stunt coordinator's house because another wrestler didn't want to shave his head for a role. And it turned out, like, I had no idea. I was like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll try this. You know, like, when I was a kid, I used to like making movies with camcorders and stuff like that. So, you know, let me do that. And it turned out to be, like, a big-time stunt coordinator. He was one of the main, if not the main guy, that was doing all the stunts for The Sopranos.
Oh, wow.
And then the movie turned out to be The Bounty Hunter with Gerard Butler and Jennifer Aniston.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So my first day on the job, I was having a fight scene with Gerard Butler.
Wow.
Which is awesome.
That's also ironic because we were just watching Jennifer Aniston's first movie.
Oh, my God. We were doing a podcast where we watched The Leprechaun.
So bad it's good.
Yeah. So you start wrestling. Now, how frequent is it? Like, is it
when I first started, I think I just went and looked back. Like, I used to keep a record of all of my matches, and I got a virus in my computer, and the only file it destroyed was the wrestling file. So I had
damn you, Iron Sheik! You hacked my computer.
I had like 3 years of matches stored, and luckily I had printed out a hard copy about a year and a half in. So then my first 2 years, I had about 65 matches total. And then that went to, for like 7 years straight, I wound up doing maybe 4 matches a week. So and it was a crazy schedule because I was wrestling everywhere between Connecticut and North Carolina. So sometimes I would do like a Jersey show Friday night, hop in the car, drive to North Carolina, wrestle, like set up the ring, wrestle Saturday night, party, and then we'd leave on Sunday and come home. Or then other weekends we'd do like a New York show Friday night, South Jersey down in Belmore, like near
right, Belmore, yeah,
with the W. We do that, like I'd do a 12 o'clock show there, then I'd hop in the car, drive to Hazleton, PA to do a 7 o'clock night show, then come back to do a show Sunday in Newark.
Jeez.
But it was awesome. Like I wrestled just about every guy I've ever grew up watching. I got to wrestle twice at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame up in Amsterdam, New York.
Wow.
I got to walk through the Hall of Fame with Nick Bockwinkel, which was like I couldn't have asked for anything more,
right.
You know, besides making it with a big company. I had a tryout for TNA. That was pretty cool in front of Terry Taylor, who was the
Red Rooster.
The Red Rooster, yes. And, you know, he was kind of big on us. He said, you know, I like the way you guys work. You'll be hearing from me. Quit his job 2 weeks later. We went back to being unknowns.
What is your, what's your wrestling name?
When I first started wrestling, me and my partner, we wrestled as the Repeat Offenders. So I wrestled as, now I wrestle as Big Irish Pete Nixon.
All right. That's an awesome name. So you're still with it then?
A little bit here and there. I took like a year off. Because I was just burnt out from it, and then as going through like relationship issues and stuff like that, and then I started going back to it, and then I had like a really bad loss in my life, and so I stopped wrestling again, and then maybe like 2 years ago I was gonna do like one last show down in North Carolina, and right. I had such a good time, I was like, no, I'm gonna stay, and I wound up winning the heavyweight title while I was down there. So then I wound up holding the title for, I don't know, like a year and a half or something. It was like crazy. It was like 500 and something days.
Now, how does that work? Like that's you work with the promoters, like you're going to hold it tonight? Like is it the amount of work you put in?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, they're, especially down there, you know, it's still wrestling to them. It's not wrestling. It's wrestling down there. So they, you know, they're looking for fights, and you know they appreciate the technical stuff, but they like really old school wrestling, like that's especially the Carolinas were a hotbed in the 80s and late 90s, like that's Ric Flair country. You know, so they want a little bit of everything, and like your hard work does pay off eventually.
Now, like doing like these smaller, like what do you call them, federations or whatever, independent, like are people able to, I guess now with the internet they're able to follow them, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. There's something called iPay-Per-View.
Okay.
That is awesome. It's literally, it's all streaming, and it's like you, these smaller companies can put on pay-per-views that that's people awesome. Just watch on their computer.
It's similar, like I did a gig maybe 2 months ago in February. I did play-by-play for like junior hockey tournament.
Nice.
I did like 7 games, and every single one of those games, like the parents can stream them online.
Yeah, so it's crazy. If the their internet kids has are changed everything.
In Maine and in Wisconsin, they can watch their kids play. It was really cool, but by like the 7th game, I didn't even know what I was saying anymore. And I mean, you're trying to learn players that you don't even know who they are.
Right.
Yeah. So by the 2nd period, you're doing pretty good. 3rd period ends, new game. It's like, new game, you know, roster.
Start the process all over
again. It was really cool, though. It was something I always wanted to do. And, of course, I told him, yeah, I've done it before. Like, to get the game.
Nice.
You know, and you just throw yourself into
of
it.
Of course.
So,
now, when you, like, do a match, or what's basically into it? Do you, like, talk to the guys beforehand, or are you just kind of, like, old school,
you know,
get in the ring?
Like, a lot of places I've wrestled, 2 separate locker rooms, good guys, bad guys. You're both trained the same way. You know what you're doing in there, like. You know, you go in there and hope you don't kill somebody.
Hmm.
I've come close. broke some, down in West Virginia, I dropped an elbow on some kid as he was trying to come up. I shattered everything from his wrist to his elbow.
Jeez.
He was kind of a dick, so.
Now, do you, what the hell was I just going to say? I was just going to ask you something about wrestling.
Like, what kind of style? Are you a brawler?
Yeah, mostly a brawler. It's weird. I'm a very fond believer in whatever you do, you should learn all aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like today, I actually went to the wrestling school. I try to go up every Thursday to just kind of stay in ring shape.
Yep.
So, before I came here, that's where I was today.
Nice.
So, when I'm there, I could do technical stuff, you know, like chain wrestling and, you know, any of that stuff. When I'm doing a show, they don't want to see big guys do that. They want to see big guys beat the crap out of somebody.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you spend time in like the hardcore stuff or anything
I mean,
like
I've
that,
done some
or?
Crazy matches. We had this one of my favorite matches ever. We did a prison yard match in Menin Arena, and we fought all over the building.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we also did. I'm going to say it was probably one of the first. I don't know if you guys remember the old War Games matches.
Oh, yeah. WCW.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
And we did one of those in Menin Arena a few years ago, and it was awesome to be a part of because I think that was the first War Games match up here for any independent company.
Like, where did he get all the fencing for that? Like,
they just, I mean, they already had one cage, so he just. The promoter bought a second one because it's just two cages. It's two rings, for anybody that doesn't know, side by side with a giant cage around it and a top on the cage. There's 10 guys in the match, 5 on each team. The match doesn't start, really, until all 10 guys are in the match, and it alternates. So two guys start, and then every 2 minutes, one guy from each team comes in, so one team always has an advantage.
So it's like the Royal Rumble-y. Two cages.
Yeah,
interesting.
It's kind of like a but the rings bubble. You can get from one ring to the other, so it's not like two separate rings. So like you're bouncing back and forth. I mean, I remember just being busted open pretty.
I was just gonna ask you, what's the worst injury you ever took?
You know, I've been very lucky. I haven't had too many injuries. I almost died. July 6th.
No injuries. Death.
No injuries. Money. Almost death. It was really bad because it was very late at night. Like, the show went long, so there wasn't many people there. I'm wrestling this guy. It was the first time that the ropes had been used on this ring, and they were a little too short. So they bought, like, the ropes weren't made the right way. And my wife's filming the match like she does when she goes down there for me. And this guy kicks me, and I stagger back into the rope. The top rope snaps. I go over backwards and land on my feet because I was trained the right way.
Wow.
The only thing that was going through my head, one of the guys that trained me, Gino Caruso, told me this story about when he was wrestling in New York. He didn't hook the rope the right way. He went through the rope, broke his ankle. So while this crazy thing is going on, that's all that was in my head. So what I did was I hooked the bottom rope with both my arms and kept my feet as straight as I could and tucked my neck really deep so I didn't break my neck and just went over and landed on my feet.
Wow. And you're a big guy too.
I'm 6'2", 442.
Wow.
Are you that big?
Yes, I am.
442. Wow.
Have you always been a big guy?
Yeah,
in your life,
I played football my senior year for Bayonne, and that was it. And I was like 285.
Okay.
Which I was super happy about being 285 because the reason I started wrestling was Mick Foley. And that was weight. That was his weight when he won his first heavyweight title.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So are you still a fan of like the WWE and all that?
Yeah, I watched it. It was weird because for a long time I didn't watch anything that I wasn't a part of because it's kind of that old mentality, like, if you're not getting booked, why go?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and then like I started watching it and like got the wife into it a little bit. So, you know, it's good. Like, it's good to keep up with current stuff just so you know what's going on and follow everything. And like we do whenever they have pay-per-views, we have friends over the house, or we'll go to, you know, like Buffalo Wild Wings or something.
Do you think like the WWF, they're kind of like losing ground, WWE, they're losing kind of ground on like building new guys? Because I always find it fascinating, like, I'm a wrestling fan, but it's like every WrestleMania, to get people excited, they got to bring back like six older wrestlers.
Yes and
to,
no.
Like, super exciting. You know what
you
I mean?
You know, it's weird because I think with NXT, it's really bringing up a lot of new guys. Actually, one of the guys that I'm friends with who started training a little bit, like when I had already been wrestling, is wrestling for the WWE and NXT now,
okay.
Which is awesome. A guy, Bull Dempsey, he's awesome, big guy, you know, and there's a lot of guys that work their way through the indies all over the country that are now making a name for themselves, where it's one of those weird things where sometimes the NXT shows that are supposed to be their minor league, technically, mm-hmm. their developmental, are better than the main shows.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, I don't know, people want to see something different sometimes.
So there's still opportunities for you?
Yes and no. I mean, I think a few years ago, when TNA was first getting really big, there was more opportunity. Now, there's really only one main company, WWE. Yeah. So you have probably, 10,000 people fighting for one spot. And honestly, a lot of companies won't take people over 35 now. So, like, I'm 30 now. I'm not in shape to be, you know, a cookie cutter superstar.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. You
what
know?
Do you love about it?
About wrestling?
Yep.
Honestly, I mean, controlling sure the crowd. Yep. Like, so there's something performing. About it. Like, yeah, the performance aspect of it. Because there have been times where a place would be completely silent, you know, and I would just love to get them riled up, you know.
Right.
I mean, I've had fans swing at me and try to hit me with things. That's and, awesome. You know, that's the reaction you want.
Yeah. You always been a bad guy?
Yes. And then for the last few years down in North Carolina, I've been wrestling as good guy. So it's very cool to be able to work either way.
It's neat.
It's much more fun to be the bad guy, though.
I would love to.
Yeah, it's easier.
Well, let me ask you. Like you just said you're 6'2"?
Yep, 6'2".
440.
442. Don't forget the 2 pounds.
I hear these stories of like when like wrestlers go to bars and like people just want to try to fight them.
You know what? I actually just told a story about that today at work. I was up in upstate New York. My friends run a roller derby team.
Mm-hmm.
So we were up there doing a workshop with another team and we went to a bar after the workshop. So all of a sudden, you know, I stick out like a sore thumb most places I go to. So guy doesn't even know that I wrestle, just right away goes, "Hey, I want to arm wrestle you." And it was right out of a movie. The DJ literally stopped playing music.
Oh my God.
There's this little.
Did a bunch of Asians come out with dollar bills?
I was waiting for it.
Sliced Alone over the top.
Lincoln Hawk. Actually, there's some guy that I wrestled with not too long ago that started arm wrestling and looks exactly like the bad guy from Over the Top. What's his name? Bull?
Yeah, it's Bull. So, I got it. Yeah. Up. It's going to kill
me. And it's awesome because he looks exactly like him. Bull Hurley.
There you
Bull
go.
Bull Hurley.
And, but yeah, and I arm wrestled the guy and I beat him. But everyone in the bar stopped what they were doing to watch us. And then there was a midget girl that kind of looked like Greg Hammer Valentine. She walked in. Like right after, it was awesome. It couldn't be any more cliche of, that's awesome. You know, like a movie scene.
It's awesome. So Pete, your wrestling name is what again?
Big Irish Pete Nixon.
Big Irish Pete Nixon. How do you spell Nixon?
N-I-X-O-N.
N-I-X-O-N. Yep. That might, like I said, that might be the name of this podcast. Big Irish Pete Nixon. Now, why the Big Irish Pete?
Because I the Big Irish part is actually from, at one time, my favorite burger was Bennigan's Big Irish Burger.
Oh, Bennigan's.
And that's where I got my my wrestling name from. And because I'm fat and I love food. And that's where that came from.
He's
and
facing Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity Johnson.
Put him down.
Denny's Mania.
Right after him, I have to do a tables.
Takes place in Moons Over Miami.
but I was very excited because I went to Ireland for my honeymoon. So the first thing I say to my wife, and now she already is kind of on the fence about me wrestling, but I tell her, you know, like I won't take any bookings 6 weeks before the wedding. So in case I get hurt, you know, I'll heal before the wedding. So I say to her, well, it'd be really cool. You know, I think I'm going to bring my gear to Ireland with us. And she goes, no, you're not. And I go, oh, okay. We go over there.
No. Why did you want to bring your gear in case you got
to? Just in case. That would have been so cool to wrestle over there. Yeah. Like, that would have been awesome. And sure enough, we're over there. We see all these posters for WWE coming to town in like a few weeks. And we stayed in Dublin. We actually overlooked the Guinness Factory. It was awesome.
And I went to Dublin. It was awesome.
And yeah, it was great. Yeah. And then, of course, the week that we're there, there's an independent show Saturday. And she goes, do you want to go? No, I do not. This is our honeymoon. But I've got to see some really crazy stuff wrestling.
Right.
And do some crazy stuff. Like, my friends always joke around, I have a very thin filter. When I'm sober, when I drink, especially, and a lot of the road trips I do, especially now in North Carolina, used to be all about partying. But again, it goes back to the not having much of a filter to begin with. The very first time I traveled down North Carolina, it's me, the promoter, two white guys, one of my best friends, Fredo, who is Puerto Rican Italian, so he looks black.
Right.
Another wrestler, Dan the Man, who is black. And so me and the promoter we said, oh, we're going to go get gas for the car because we just pulled into this town. And we said to the other two guys, oh, go get a table at the Waffle House. You know, we'll be in there in a second. So we go in there. The place is packed. Those two guys and the cook were the only people of any color in the entire building.
Oh, man.
And everyone is staring at them because they took the last booth. So now we walk in. And everyone's kind of like not really looking at us. They're still looking at them. But then they see us sit down with them. And now everyone's staring at us. So I stand up and I look at the entire packed Waffle House and I go, don't worry, we're going to feed them before we hang them. It weighs them down.
Oh, my God.
Everyone's head snapped back to their plates. And it blew my mind
how
overtly racism is still prevalent in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just ridiculous. And that was definitely an eye opener. It's a funny story now, but in hindsight, I guess it was, it was very scary. The two other guys were scared, and then a black biker gang pulled in and came and sat at the counter. And I remember Dan looks at me and goes, "I've never felt so safe in my entire life."
Now, off air, you were mentioning something about your brother. You had him wrestle a match.
My little brother. We were doing this deal where the promoter was supposed to wrestle this. He was doing the evil promoter deal, and he was supposed to wrestle this big jacked guy. And so the whole crowd knew, like, the promoter was going to get his ass kicked. And my little brother had come down to the trip with me. So he was, I want to say he was like maybe 11 or 12. He might have even been younger. He might have been like 9. So this guy usually wore like purple tights with like lightning bolts, and he was jacked and tattooed. So we take a magic marker, we start drawing tattoos on my brother. So the actual guy, Bam, has like a giant pentagram tattoo on his back that covers his whole back. We drew a giant smiley face on my brother's back. And I took like silver marker, and like we found like purple scrub and just started like drawing lightning on it. And I had been hoping to groom him to wrestle later on, and when he hit like 16, I want him to come up to the place I trained at in Lake Hiawatha. So I taught him some stuff, and he actually had a really cool little match. And it was funny because I was out there because I was aligned with the evil promoter at the time. So, you know, like, the crowd down there didn't know it was my brother. So me being the good brother that I am, after watching my brother get his ass kicked, I have the promoter hold his arms, and I deliver this giant splash and completely knock the wind out of my brother.
What was your we didn't even ask you. What was your, like, finishing move?
Back then, I used to do the big splash a lot. I used to do this weird thing, too, where I'd have the guy in, like, a fireman's carry on my shoulders, mm-hmm. and I'd flip him over, and I'd go down to one knee and give him a neck breaker over my knee.
Yeah.
And now, lately, I've been doing I kind of took it old school, and I'm a big Stan Hansen fan, so I've been throwing the left arm lariat. And I did a show in North Carolina, like, a year ago, and I hit this kid so hard with it. He folded inward and kneed himself in the head.
You have a name? You have a name for it?
I call it the Celtic Rose.
And there you go.
Yep.
There you go. What's the best finishing move of all time?
That's a tough one. You know what? It's weird because I like kind of like the simple stuff. I
think like
the DDT.
Oh, the DDT.
I lost to a DDT the second time I wrestled to the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. I jumped up really high trying to splash this guy, cracked my dome on the ring post, not even on the buckle. I overextended past the buckle. I hit my head on the ring post. The guy turned around and I just DDT'd, and I don't remember anything except the ref pushing me out of the ring.
So I guess, you know, we spend a lot on wrestling. So you're stuntman too. And yeah. Stuntman and actor. So I guess tell us which came first,
Stunts came first, and then...
Like, what kind of stunts? Like,
It was anything? Pretty simple stuff. Like, it's nothing super crazy. You know, it's like fight scenes, falls, stuff like that. Like, and it's weird because sometimes they kind of overlap, like, an acting and a stunt scene. I did... One of my favorite things that I ever filmed was an episode of Nurse Jackie. And I played a psych patient that got to – I was loose in the pharmacy, and they just told me rip it up.
Nice.
And then it was great. Like, we did one take.
So it was like a one-shot deal.
Then, yeah, it was – well, yes and no. Like, they kind of let me go a few times because changing the camera angles and stuff. And the director goes, hey, do you want to improv some lines? And I said, yeah, sure. And he goes, okay. He goes – it was really weird. He goes, this is short. This is Showtime. Can I curse on this?
Of course.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So he goes – this is Showtime. Say whatever you want, just short of waving your dick out. Whipping your dick out and waving at the camera. And I said, okay. So, like, and mind you, I was in, like, just a hospital gown and tidy whiteys.
Mm.
So
I was hoping that's what you would come in today, but a little disappointing.
I changed after wrestling, so.
That should be your wrestling outfit.
So, yeah, and it was awesome. Like, it's one of my favorite scenes. If you YouTube Nurse Jackie Breaks Up the Day, the whole scene is on there because it was one of the clips that Showtime put out. And then, like, another time, I had, like, a fight scene with Kevin Bacon on the first season of The Following.
Really?
Yeah.
The Following. I watched the first season of that.
Did you? The episode where in the sex club?
I watched the whole first season. I couldn't get into it after that. But
yeah.
I liked it started really good, really good. And then
that's when he came in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I was probably like episode 11 maybe. Nice. It was weird. I've been in some really cool stuff.
That's that awesome.
A lot of stuff that I haven't watched until, oh, I'm going to be on this show because, you know, which is cool.
That's a big show.
It was cool to be on that. I was on an episode of the first season, White Collar, which was, again, it was stunts, but I got so much screen time, it turned into more of an acting job, and, like, they gave me a character name. Ooh. And then the last thing I just worked on was a episode of Elementary.
I was just going to say, I saw that on your Facebook one day, like, Elementary or something.
It was awesome. That's awesome. That was really cool because it started as a stunt job where I was already a dead body and I was stuffed in this locker, and the one character, I don't remember the actor's name, but he's on Mad Men also. So he was doing like a guest spot on the show. He opens up the locker looking for a clue for a math game, and my dead body falls out with all these like mothballs, and I'm shot in the head, the knee, and the foot. So I'm thinking, okay, this is just a one-off. They're like, oh, the John Doe. I'm watching the episode. They gave me a character name. They gave me this whole backstory. It turns out I was a math genius. Nice. And, like, I was part of playing the game. And it was just this crazy
That's awesome.
Thing. And it was awesome. And then, like, we did one day, my whole first day on set, they had me all in this makeup. And I was laying on top of a morgue slab for, like, a few hours while they were snapping pictures just to use for this one scene. And then the second day we filmed the actual stunt. And then, like, I think, like, I'm working a job now. But before that, like, the last 6 years, I pumped gas, you know, right. And it gave me a good flexible schedule. So I always found the contradiction very funny. Like, oh, Monday I'm going to have a fight scene with Kevin Bacon. On Tuesday, I'm going to pump some schmuck's gas, you know, for a little over minimum wage. And it's very funny, like. Yeah. The juxtaposition.
Even with the comedy thing, though, when everyone, you know, people hear, like, oh, you're a comedian, boy. Well, I also work another job. You know, like,
yeah.
It's,
you think, like, they don't realize glory, you know? It's, you know what, it's not like, you know, if you're in a professional level, you're pretty much dedicated mostly to whatever your job is. When you're working on a smaller level of something, you're trying to do that on top of life. Paying your bills. Yeah. Right, exactly. My life.
Passion in life.
Family. Like the first time I walked away from wrestling was because I was with a girl who had a daughter, and like I was playing the dad role, and like only dad she right. knew, and you know what? So my weekends were getting taken up by that.
Right.
So I walked away because at that time my family was more important than wrestling was.
Right. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's that whole thing, like, growing up, quote-unquote, but, like, also still trying to chase your passion. But those growing up problems right. don't go
and
away.
You have to figure out what when, you know, life steps in the way. So, like, you know, you walk away from stuff. Maybe you come back to it. Maybe you don't. And then you just have good memories.
Now with the acting and stuff, like, are you in, like, a... like a stunt guy kind of union thing, or like
no,
where they
I'm,
can contact
I'm in,
you?
I am
like...
in SAG-AFTRA, which right. is a big acting union. Yep. So I do have my card. With the stunt coordinators, it's kind of a weird small community. So, and I didn't realize how small it was until the last job I worked on, because like I'll just get random calls from stunt coordinators like, hey, I want to use you for this. Are you available? You know, yes, no, whatever. And I worked with a bunch of different guys in the New York area. So I was talking to the last guy I worked with for elementary. And I'm like, just out of curiosity, oh, did so-and-so refer me? He goes, no, I have your headshot. And I'm thinking, okay, he just has a printout from, like, you know, somebody else. When I first started, the main stunt coordinator I work with, Pete Bogosi, gave me a list of stunt coordinators in the area and their addresses. So I sent my headshot and a letter like, oh, I was referred to by Pete and this and that. So this guy that I just worked with for elementary had my headshot from like 4 years prior and still kept it on file. And I'm like,
just, you never know.
It was the weirdest thing. I was like, now I don't feel like I mailed out all of those copies for nothing. Like that one job made the difference. And then I realized everybody else that I've worked with over last year are guys that were on that list.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you know, it's just anything like with the, I do a lot of video shooting and stuff like that. And
nice.
I get like, you know,
randomly. That's actually one of my other passions.
Nice. Ooh. Nice. Yeah, I, you know, I won't work for these guys like shooting sports or something like that for months and months and months. And then I'll get a random text message in the middle of the day. Hey, can you come down to Seton Hall tonight and shoot? Like, it's just, you know, you think you're completely forgotten. Oh, it was a one-off kind of thing. And the next night you're doing... I'm standing on the court getting almost run over by Seton Hall lesbians because I was under the basket and right by the center. Oh, it was frightening. But, you know, it's just like you get these random gigs.
Hey, it's the weirdest
hospital
thing.
Again?
Same thing with comedy, too. You know, you never know. Someone liked you. Someone saw you. You gave a card to someone that years later.
Just you never know when the next thing's going to pop up.
I like that guy. You know, we got a show coming. We got a fundraiser coming. You know, hey, maybe he can do a spot. You just never know. That's like the motto of this podcast. It's almost like you never fucking know who I'm going to end up talking to, you know? And the fact that you live down the street from me, you know, literally, which is weird.
Yeah.
And that happened from a call that you put into a food guy. He came back. We were eating there. We saw your picture on the, you know, it's just like all this coincidence that rolls in, you know?
And it's weird because I have people that go up there at like random times and will just, like, text me a picture of me. So, like, yep. I had friends from Bayonne that were somewhere up there and, like, sent my parents the picture.
That's funny. So, like, what's on the horizon here? Anything coming up?
Nothing. Actually, right now, I'm really concentrating on, I really enjoy editing film.
No, I do it all the time.
And I kind of self-taught myself Adobe Premiere.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a Final Cut guy.
Fair enough. I never got into the Mac thing.
Yep.
But so I started looking into it more, and I realized, like, you know, I don't want to do if I had the time, I would totally do a full-fledged, like, year-long film school and whatever. So I started looking for just editing.
Right.
So, because that's where I think I have the most fun is editing. Right. Like, I like shooting. I like being on the other end of the camera.
Even me, like, nowadays, I still, like, unfortunately do a lot of weddings because they pay.
Yeah.
But I usually hire the shooter now, and I just put them together.
Yeah,
I hate shooting now. Like, I've done it for so long. I hate it, you know. And it's stressful, and it's a lot of keeping up with equipment and investing in equipment. It's like, it's crazy.
I just did a friend's wedding. It was my first wedding I ever did. I did the photography. I hired a friend of mine as my assistant to do the video, and now it's a matter of putting everything together, touching up some photos, and you know, you don't realize like how much work goes into it.
Like, what would be an average, like, how long it would take to edit, like, a regular video?
There have been times, like, it's weird. Like, I've done a lot of, I'll do a lot of, the company that I wrestle for in North Carolina, I'll do a lot of their commercials for down there. So, like, I remember, I don't think I've done a commercial for him probably in, like, a few months. And then it was just so rusty, like, I forgot what I was doing in Photoshop. I forgot. So a 30-second commercial turned into an 8-hour edit because it took me forever. So then I started thinking, like, you know what? I really want to keep on top of this. So I just took and I highly recommend this to anybody. I just took a one-day course for Adobe Premiere at Unique Photo in Fairfield. The place has awesome classes. And then I started looking into the Edit Center in Brooklyn, and it's a school just for editing.
Nice.
And they have this awesome 6-week program. And at first I was like, all right, you have a bunch of people that are like, you never heard of, whatever. So then I check out their teachers list, and you got editors that have worked on everything that have like won Academy Awards, have been nominated, like the editor for the Lovely Bones.
Right.
7 Years a Slave, I think the editor for that. Like, it was really, really intense, really cool stuff. The editor for Murderball. Like, the documentary, crazy. Yeah. And I was just looking at the list, and I was just like, this is where I want to go. And now it's a matter of conning work into letting me take the six weeks. I mean, it's not a bad schedule. Their schedule is like, you do a whole week first, and then the next 5 weeks are either morning session or afternoon session, so it's like a half a day thing.
Yeah, I fell in love with editing at college, and it's actually bringing this podcast full circle because I interned at a local TV station where I met Joe.
Very cool.
And that's where I really honed my editing skills. Because what was cool about doing the local thing was I was able to shoot sports and municipal things and these little like small produced TV shows. So I was able to learn instead of like gaffing and running wire for years and years and years. I was just thrown into it, you know, like, so editing has always been like my favorite part of the whole thing. Like, even in college, that's what I loved to do was editing. And like now, like, I teach now, but like now I'm getting sick of that. I'm really starting to get back interested in video and comedy and more back into that creative thing, you know.
I mean, it's good to always keep creative. Like, it's weird. I really enjoyed when I was younger. Like, I always had camcorders when I was younger. Like, I probably went through 6 camcorders over the course of from when I was, like, maybe 9 to, like, a teenager.
Right.
You know, and just filming stupid stuff with my friends. And then years later, when I got into acting, I found myself kind of paying attention more to the production crew than I was really what was going on. Because, like, I already knew what I had to do and this and that. But it was so fascinating to see them do everything and how much work goes into a 6-second
especially
scene
on these bigger shows. Like,
oh, it's like, ridiculous.
Like, you take a show like The Walking Dead or something like that. Like, it's just crazy. Like,
it's crazy. I worked on Men in Black 3.
Nice.
We were there for I was just doing background work. And I was playing a prisoner in the opening scene. And we were there for
five weeks. Good at these prisoner roles.
Yeah. you know, it's funny. If you see all of my, you know, my much earlier work, it's prisoner, thug, wrestler, thug.
I'm sorry. I got to interrupt.
Speaking of prison life, the dog is raping the cat as we speak.
My dog and my male cat have a very openly gay relationship with each other.
Good for them.
Yeah. But like you're like talking about, oh dude, and behind you I just see my bulldog just banging the cat.
This guy is describing his life. He's getting passionate about it. We're just chuckling as we're seeing a dog humping a cat.
Very hard to focus.
What? I agree 100%. If my back wasn't to them, I probably would have stopped mid-sentence.
He's such a creep, man. He's such a creep. But anyway, Men in Black 3.
But yeah, and it was great. I was there for like 5 days on set. The first 2 days, we didn't do jack shit. We were there for like 10 hours, getting paid to be there overtime. The second day, we had steak and lobster for lunch.
Jeez.
On the next soundstage, they were finishing up Mr. Popper's Penguins. On the soundstage after that, they were filming Boardwalk Empire.
Jeez.
It was awesome. And then probably one of the best parts was Nicole Scherzinger.
Right.
She was in it, so getting to see her in a micro mini wasn't terrible for a few days.
Did you see Will Smith?
No, I saw his trailer. I saw, we did, it was weird. I saw Tommy Lee Jones when I was walking out of the fitting at Steiner Studios. So that was pretty cool to run into him. And then, what's his name? He's on Flight of the Conchords. He played the bad guy in Men in Black 3. Jermaine.
Oh, Jermaine. I forget his last name. Jermaine is how I know him because on the show.
And but yeah, he was really cool. Like it was him and Nicole Scherzinger. You know,
I saw Flight of the Conchords and Dave Chappelle last year together.
Really?
Down in PNC. That's pretty cool. It was awesome. John Mulaney stopped by and like a bunch of Sarah Silverman stopped in. It was like
that's really crazy.
PNC. It was that Oddball Festival or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So like a lot of people just showed up and like did 15, 20
that's
minutes.
Awesome.
It was like crazy. It's crazy.
I think Chappelle Jim Brewer still, just did a show at like favorite, a high school.
My favorite comedian right there.
Is
out
it really?
Of all time.
That's awesome.
My favorite
he just
comedian.
Did like whatever town he grew up in Jersey. He just did a show at the high school for a fundraiser for them.
Yeah, now he lives over in like Chester, I think.
Yeah.
Right? So he's just an awesome guy. He's going through like crazy hell too. Like he lost his sister, his father, and now his wife has breast cancer.
Yeah.
Like, in 1 year.
Like, everything hit.
And he
nuts.
Like keeps just like, he seems. His image is that he's this very community, like very involved and very family oriented, and so
very laid back. I mean, you put up that you commented on that video where you talked about the 11 game win streak from the Mets.
Oh yeah. He does these Mets videos every day.
Yes,
they're hilarious.
They're awesome.
They're hilarious.
Like, I was
Let's
never a big baseball
go
fan.
Mets, the Dark Knight again, the most clutch man, Lucas Duda. He's like, we got it, Mets fans. We got it. It's special. He's so funny, man.
It's funny. I was never a big baseball fan. I used to despise baseball because I found it boring. I started going to a lot of Somerset Patriot games, and I
that
fell
field's
baseball.
Awesome.
I love that. My wife has worked
I threw
there
out
for
the
like
first
12
pitch
season.
There.
Did you really?
What? It was on my. It was funny. I was talking to my friend and his wife at the time. I was saying like, oh, you know, one of these days I want to throw the first pitch out at a game. Like that's on the bucket list. And she's like, oh. Well, my company's sponsoring this Somerset Patriots game next week. I'm sure I can get you to do it. I'm like, hell yeah. You know, like, and they were like a suntan lotion company. And I have the video
That's
somewhere.
So awesome.
I was like, I don't care. I threw a first pitch out. You don't got to know where it was.
Yeah, no.
I did the stress factory and I threw out a first pitch.
That's
How'd
it.
The
there
pitch
you go.
Did you hit the catcher?
I hit it. I felt like I threw it like a little bit of a fag, but I was
as
trying
to bounce. That's all that matters.
I didn't want to like 50 cent it and like throw it straight into the ground, you know?
Yeah.
But
I thought 50 cent was the one that like floated.
Oh
like
yeah, it went nowhere
50
near
feet in
it.
The
yeah.
other direction.
Yeah. It was pretty bad. It was almost. It was probably the worst possible first.
I
pitch.
Still say the ones that when the girls just like spike the ball like 2 feet in front of them.
Yeah,
the
they
worst.
Barely hit. It's, get past the clay.
A lot of pressure, man. There's.
It is.
There's maybe 400 people there, but I'm like, I'm like, oh man, don't do it, don't do it, don't put it in the turf, don't like whip it over into the front row.
Yeah.
But. Anywhere, this kind of brings us to the end. We're a little over an hour here. So anywhere that like, people can check you out?
Check out facebook.com/onscreenpete. That's my acting Facebook.
Onscreen Pete. That will probably be the name of this episode.
Nice. And that's you can follow me on Twitter there, too, at Onscreen Pete.
Onscreen Pete.
So I try to do Twitter a little bit more now.
you and me both. I can't do it. That's the only.
Right, Luke,
that's the only
up,
reason he's
it.
On the podcast.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Other than that, I mean, that's pretty much it. If you look up like Big Irish Pete Nixon fan page,
that might be the name of this episode.
I think that's
Big Irish Pete Nixon. that's
my wrestling page. That's pretty much it.
Check out Elementary. Check
you know,
out.
Since we're coming to the end, could you possibly do like a promo that Big Irish Pete would do? Just
yeah,
like a quick.
Oh my god!
Like, imagine I was your opponent. Like, just I know you're going to make me crap my pants.
What's your wrestling name?
The Burls.
The Burls.
Yeah. Call him like a verbal shenanigans pussy too. Like, make fun of the show too.
You know, I keep hearing the Burls.
yap and yap and flap his gums on the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, and all I want to do is plug my ears up because it's nothing but crap. The next time I see him, I'm going to grab him by the throat, pull my arm back, and hit him with the Irish Rose. I'm going to take his head off, and then I'm going to mail it to his mother.
Beautiful. Just beautiful. That might be how we intro the show for now.
That'd be my wrestling persona. I'd just be going, I don't mind you. We don't have to fight. Come on. I made this lovely squash dinner.
It's in a casserole pan. Bought it from Bed Bath & Beyond. Pete, thanks for coming on so much.
Awesome.
It was a lot
of
fun, man.
For
very interesting, you know. Like I said, you just never know who you run into here. Berlew, anything coming up?
Yes, actually, Thursday, April 30th, I am going to be at Woody's Roadside Tavern. That's in Farmingdale, New Jersey. That's through Rocco Romeo, good friend of ours. Tickets still available. Call up this. Woody's.
Call up the Woody's.
Yeah.
I'll be at Scotty's Comedy Cove on Friday, May 1st. I forget who's he's the opener for, like, the Rachel Ray Show, and, like, he's the warm-up comic. R.C. Rich, R.C. Smith, or I'm doing a good job of promoting, but I'll be there. I will be there.
Mark the Woody's.
May 1st, and then May 22nd, I'll be at the new and refurbished Bridgestones Comedy Club in South Amboy. Matt opened up a new club. I did the room twice, and he was able to, I guess they gave him the club now. Like, it's just upstairs of a restaurant, and they able let him paint it and put seats and curtains. So hopefully some major success. Verbal Shenanigans podcast, please follow us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Podbean. I found us on like two other websites I forgot I even signed up for, like some random podcast website.
X-Hamster?
On Chatterbait. No. keep the wind at your back. Life is funny, people. Laugh at it.
Bye, peeps.